we'll begin here. Father, we thank you once again for allowing us to come together and to look at these things related to the end times and the different concepts that people have come up with. And as we look at these, just to try to understand different positions, pray that you might give us clarity. And but more than that, Father, that as we move forward, that we would have a real understanding of what you've said and what your plans are. And we do pray in Christ's name. Amen. Well, the all-millennial view, putting that together was relatively simple in terms of, looking for different people's opinions or statements, not opinions so much, but expressions, and trying to put it together in a format where we could go through it. Postmillennialism is so much more complicated because of what's going on in the contemporary scene. Where all millennialism is pretty much the same thing that it's been for 100 years or more, postmillennialism has changed. And so now you have two branches of it. And you have the classic, what I might refer to as the classic position, and then a contemporary position. Not meaning that everybody contemporarily holds to the contemporary, but meaning that it's something that's emerged more recently. And those have, overall similarities in the sense that the Christ returns after the millennium, but they have very different feelings about them, expressions, and the whole emotion about them is very different. I think I had mentioned before that when I first became a Christian and was going to a Bible church in Amarillo, we had a guest speaker, and he was talking about the different positions, and I just remember so clearly him explaining these, and he's talking about postmillennialism, and he says, think of it as a fence post. It's dead. Nobody believes that anymore. And that is no longer true. And some people that I assumed would have been all mill, are actually post mill now. R.C. Sproul, I would have assumed was all mill. I just kind of had that association that Reformed theologians would be all mill. But he's a post mill is his position. and then you have something like, when you look at things and try to find doctrinal statements, and I went to several of the Reformed seminaries and can find no statement, on end times at all. So to even get a feeling, not even a general statement, Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary gives this. God in His own time and in His own way will bring the world to its appropriate end. Now that's what you say when you're holding no position. And it's not trying to be derogatory to him. It's just, you're bringing these broad things that all, this is what evangelical, this is what Orthodox Christians believe, that God will return, that Jesus Christ will return. According to His promise, Jesus Christ will return personally, invisibly, in glory to the earth. That is what all, Christians, that believe the Bible, that's what you believe. Now, the distinctives of it put you into those different camps. And some groups, such as Southern Baptist, don't hold an official position. Now, individuals hold positions, and some Southern Baptists may be very outspoken on certain positions, but the denomination doesn't. Reformed schools evidently are very much the same, as they're able to embrace all millennialism or post-millennialism, either one. But just to kind of go through this, in postmillennial is that view, as we talked before, that the kingdom of God is present right now and being extended throughout the world through the proclamation of the gospel and the saving work of the Holy Spirit in the hearts of individuals, and that eventually the world will be Christianized and that Christ will return at the close of a long period of righteousness and peace known as the millennium. So this period, long period of righteousness, peace is the millennium. Undefined period of time, not a literal 1,000 years. It's an undefined period of time. And so there's a progression in the millennium, this period of time, which probably, from most viewpoint, probably it's already started at the first coming of Christ. Some others that it may be a little later, maybe wouldn't say it's actually started. But in that millennium, there's a progression. But it's not, as some of us that aren't post-mill might kind of be derogatory, this kind of this utopian, everything is going to be perfect. That's not really what they're saying. It's not a perfect society. It's not that everything is perfect and that. But the progression is such that the gospel is spread so effectively and there's such a reception that most are believers. And evil has not been done away with, but it has been marginalized because of the impact of Christians acting like Christians should act. So that's pretty easy. It may be hard to imagine in the sense of actually doing it, but from the standpoint, it's easy to imagine that if Christians acted like Christians are supposed to act, what impact that would have on the world. And if there was a growing number of Christians where most were Christians, that would have a tremendous impact upon the world. And that's kind of where the post-mill, at least in the classic view, was. You know, at times this kingdom is viewed as a spiritual rule of Christ, and then at some times it's more, a literal 1,000 years, with the triumph of the kingdom values at the end. But, you know, nevertheless, the bottom line is that the return of Christ comes after this millennium, whether it's a prolonged, long, long period of time, whether it's more in the sense of a literal 1,000 years, whether it's more in a spiritual, it's all coming at the end. Postmillennialists, a few points about it. It was a view that was very popular in the 19th century. So the end of the 1800s, going into the early 1900s, it was the view held by the major theologians. So theologians like Charles Hodge and B.B. Warfield, some of these great Reformed theologians of that time period associated with like Yale and Harvard Divinity Schools. Those are a lot of the guys from which came what were, out of that came things like fundamentalism following that. They were a post-mill. But if you look at that time period in the late 1800s is when Darwin's view of man and the progression of man comes into play. So you have, on the one hand, you have religion, Christianity, primarily seeing this to oversimplify, to say man is improving, or the world is improving, not so much man is improving, but people, there's a progression. And then within the scientific world, moving toward this idea of evolution, that man is improving. And you have great strides in society. Everything's looking forward, and so there's this real optimistic view at that time. But this was prior to World War I, which was given, when the shock of we're actually having this war that's involving the whole world, it was given this title in some sense, or some places, as the war to end all wars. So that kind of worked until the Second World War. So following the two world wars, postmillennialism declined because of the conflict between that optimism and the stark reality of world wars. But there was a resurgence of postmillennialism in the in the last 25 years. So today you might be able to classify it as two types of postmillennialism. Classic, the older view that held a special optimism for the final stage of Earth's history and argued for a future utopian age brought about by the universal spread and reception of the gospel. This might also be referred to as pietistic postmillennialism. It does not embrace the view that the kingdom involves a total transformation of culture through the application of biblical law. On the other hand, then we come to a contemporary form. And this newer view holds that the kingdom already exists in the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies and it's coexisting right now, more so than seeing it as some age yet to come toward the end of the church age. This might be known or referred to as theonomic, which has the idea of God in control, postmillennialism, which does. So that's the difference. The first one does not on this last statement, and this one does embrace the view that the kingdom involves the total transformation of culture through the application of biblical law. So when you look at this contemporary view of postmillennialism that can be referred to as Christian Reconstructionism, Dominion Theology, theonomic, a few different terms can be used of it. It is embracing Old Testament law for society. And so it is an application of a biblical law, God's rule on society. So God gave rules, gave regulations, gave directions to Israel of how to be a nation. And so the appropriate thing for us, the church, which is the reinstated Israel, is to follow those laws that God gave Israel and put them into application today. So someone in this realm of belief, then you would be very pro toward implementing those kinds of things, laws that reflect that, politicians that reflect that, rules that reflect that, things that transform our culture and our society, our political landscape, to align with that. The millennium, in a classic postmillennialism, refers to this golden age of spiritual prosperity during the present church age. It's generally thought of as an indefinite, long time. During that time, there would be an uplifted social, economic, political, and cultural life in the world that reflects the changed character of people. I think that maybe was one of the differences, one of the ways to see differences. In the classic view, you're seeing this change of people, and in the Reconstructionist, while that change is there, it seems to me it's more of a change from the outside in, not so much a transformation of people as much as we're enacting rules and regulations that govern. I'm not sure they're saying that, but that's what it seems to me. When they talk about Christianized, it doesn't mean that every person on earth will be a Christian, and it doesn't is not intended to imply that sin is abolished. Rather, it's a reduction of various forms of evil to a relatively small amount, and instead of this evil that kind of is rampant, Christian principles becoming the rule, not the exception. So when they use these terms about it, a Christianized, a millennium where the world is Christianized, don't equate that with sinlessness, don't equate that with everyone is a Christian, but do equate it with most are Christians and sin has been marginalized, if you could use that term. The Great Commission takes on, the Great Commission is an important concept within any view, regardless of the thought, if it's biblical, if it's Christian, the Great Commission has to be the Great Commission. But it has a different import within postmillennialism. And it's not merely a proclaiming the gospel, but it is the effective evangelization of all, so that people actually hear and respond, and thus hearts and lives of people are transformed. So that is a central thing in this, is that the gospel goes to the whole world and people hear and people, are transformed. Thus, you're putting into place the idea of a Christianized world. Where perhaps within other views, the gospel has to go to the whole world because that's what scriptures are going to happen. But it may be more in the sense of the message going, not so much a thought that that means everyone is going to respond as much. Some summary position on classic postmillennialism by a contemporary theologian. He writes, many people simply cannot believe that the world is getting better. Anybody else want to raise your hand? But we should remember that as far as evil is concerned, that has been the natural condition of the world ever since the fall of the race of Adam. At the time Christ came, nearly 2,000 years ago, the entire world, with the exception of the little land of Palestine, was in heathen darkness. It makes an interesting point there, that it seems like nothing's getting better, things are getting worse, but his point is, you know, the whole world was heathen, except for this little Jewish nation 2,000 years ago, and now there's been a spread of Christianity. But since the time, since that time, the gospel has been progressively carried throughout the world, and today there are tens of millions of true Christians. The marvel is not that there is so much evil in the world, but there is so much righteousness. Christian principles are widely recognized as those by which people and nations should live and be governed, even though they are as yet very inconsistently applied. While we do not yet see a Christianized world, we do see the church making great progress. And so that's kind of how he summarized. Charles Hodge, who was a Reformed theologian in the late 1800s, he gave this these kind of summary things. Three events that had to occur before the return of Christ. The universal spread of the gospel, so the Great Commission being carried out both literally in the sense of the message going out to all the world, but also that it's effective. The national, but not necessarily individual, conversion of Jews. So there is a turn of Israel. Israel does respond to the Lord. And then the coming of the Antichrist. Events at the return of Christ, there's these events that all occur at the same time, basically. The resurrection of the dead, of the just and of the unjust, the general judgment, the end of the world, and the consummation of Christ's kingdom. So, the end of the kingdom. So, you can see what those kind of terms are. The consummation. That the kingdom has been there. His return brings the end of that. Now, contemporary postmillennialism. Yes? I think what he means nationally there in that terminology is contrasted to individual. Not necessarily, I don't know that Hodge necessarily would have thought, I didn't read his whole paragraph on this, or several pages probably, on that it would have been that they would have been recognized politically as a nation. The way I understood the term and, as using it, it would be in the sense of saying as a whole, when you look at Jewish as a whole, they've responded, but not necessarily individually or each individual. Good point. But yeah, there was no nation, and I don't know if anybody would have thought there necessarily would be a nation politically. I don't know. He may have been saying that it would respond. I don't think they'd say it would respond to be a nation. Be my guess, at that time he wouldn't have said that, but he might have, because that has to happen before Christ can return.
Well, there was a Zionist movement at that point.
Yeah, I mean there's always been those efforts, but so I don't know. I really think national is, though it does imply if you're going to see Jews, you got to have them somewhat together as opposed to being scattered. I think it's to see a movement, per se. On contemporary postmillennialism, it says, you know, it's like the kingdom was founded on the earth during the earthly ministry of Jesus, and the church became the transformed Israel. So the kingdom has been around since Jesus inaugurated the kingdom, and the church, you know, takes Israel's place. It is the transformed Israel. The fundamental nature of the kingdom is redemptive and spiritual, with Christ ruling through his people. So the kingdom is here now. It's redemptive. People come to know Christ. It's spiritual as opposed to physically literal. And Christ rules, but not physically on earth. He rules through the church. The kingdom will exercise a transformational social, cultural influence in history as more people are converted to Christ. So, the world just becomes more Christianized as more Christian and more people become Christians and have that impact. The kingdom will gradually expand. Christ's physical presence is not necessary for this expansion. The Great Commission will be fulfilled in history with the overwhelming majority of men and nations being Christianized. Righteousness will abound, wars will cease, and prosperity and safety will flourish. So definitely a movement toward things. Yes. You know, you have to wonder about all these surveys because you can get another one. I just heard somebody last week about, 90% believe in God, and you got all these other numbers. And
what was the question they asked?
Yeah, how do they ask that? It's very interesting how you get all this. And yes, it is hard to believe, and it's pretty hard to. It's. What happens to, I mean, I'm all in favor of this kind of transformation, but what does this kind of transformation look like? And, to make that tremendous, we've seen impact. I mean, if you go back to the early church, the Christians had no political standing whatsoever, and they had a real impact on society. I mean, in Rome, they just discarded people. And Christians came in and started taking care of people. Had a real impact on society. And so we've seen periods when the church, through its action, has had real impact on society. But that's not the same as, righteousness abounding, war ceasing, prosperity and safety flourishing. I don't know what that term means. But there's so much of this, it is kind of scary in terms of that. We are reacting pretty strong to this idea of Islam, saying, it's a little different now. It's not the same. Because the Islam way of Christian, Islaming, if you want to try to make those terms, Islaming the world is get rid of everybody else. And this way is converting, and there's a pretty big difference.
They want to convert you first, but you don't convert them.
Yeah. but it is taking Muhammad's laws and putting them in place, and this is taking Israel's laws and putting them in place. Yeah, there are some similarities, and don't want to go too far saying they're similar, but in that broad sense, yeah. I think they would answer that one very easily. We don't. that's my view of what they would how their answer would be. You're right. We don't. We're only saying the other one to keep from getting blown up by other people at the moment. So we can blow ourselves up. Oh, well. Anyway, moving on. The golden age of spiritual prosperity will possibly continue for centuries or even for millenniums, after which Earth's history will come to a close by the personal, visible, and bodily return of Jesus Christ. So this age, you can see, especially from the contemporary, becomes very broad. I mean, the kingdom is going on for a long time, and it moves to this state. But then you have this, quote, millennium, after it's moved to it, and you actually reach this kind of apex of the millennium, and it may, they're not sure, it just may go for thousands of years. And so that's kind of where it is. A very key thing is the book of Revelation. And so I put these views down that you really don't want to know, probably, but they always confuse me. The Predatus view, this is basically saying that John wrote about what was going on right then. This was what was going to what was happening and what was going to happen immediately. So it's his history. You know, this is in the past, not just necessarily historic, but it. You know, so all the visions came out of the conditions in Rome at that time, and so basically what they're looking at is that these judgments, all the discourse and all this, was looking at the fall of Rome in 70 AD. So almost all judgments, everything has to do. Now the full preterist position says all those, everything, all, you know, everything, and I really don't understand, but even the second coming of Christ, you know, all this occurred at 70 AD. Then there's the partial, and it still looks at the 70 AD, but it seems these kind of dual things. There's all of this occurred at 70 AD, but yet there still is a future, you know, return of Christ. Then there's sometimes viewed the kind of a history view, the historistic view. What does that mean? I don't know. It's ancient words that positions that, you know. I don't know. I didn't look up what the actual word means from what its roots are. from excuse me. From the history standpoint, this would be very much like we looked at last week from the all-millennialist, that it's looking at the book in a panoramic view of history from the first coming of Christ to the second coming of Christ. And then the idealistic view sees this as it was written to encourage. It's symbolic language. It's looking at all these conflicts, and it's to encourage people in the difficulties of life. And then the futuristic view says from chapter 4 in Romans, you got the first three chapters that deal with the seven churches, and then chapter 4 on deals with the events of the end time. So John is not writing about things that are going on in his time period. He's looking ahead. It's totally ahead. And the history would be ahead, but it's looking at the panoramic view from then until the end. This one is saying that the future is all, you know, at the end times, not from the, you know, 90 AD until whenever, but just related to the end times.
How does it deal with Revelation 1, verse 19?
In what? Well, it would all be the same. See, the first one, the preterist view, would say John is writing that, but what he's looking at is what is right now, what's coming, and what's going to be. But we're talking about what's going to be within the next 10 years. It's all going to happen very quickly. It happened by 70 AD. The history perspective is saying, yes, they're looking at what is going to come in general panoramic view of history. And so we saw those last week, the all-millennials, so there was these seven progressive, parallel and progressive stages through Revelation. Now, the idealistic, that would be a little harder because that would be saying it's all symbolism. The future would be taking that and saying that it's looking at these things as they relate to the second coming of Christ. So it's not looking at a broad scope of history. It's looking just almost exclusively at the things related surrounding the second coming of Christ. So it's been suggested that postmillennialists are usually the preterist or the historist. They're going to be in one of those two camps. All millennialists are either have that kind of history or they might go into the idealistic. Historical premillennialists have to either kind of go into the history part or the future, where dispensationalists would all be, would strictly be the future perspective. And so the only reason I mention that is that those terms is that first one is people like R.C. Sproul, that's terms they will use. That's how they're going to define their position. And when they look at Revelation, that's going to be their position. They're going to talk about these things being fulfilled in 70 A.D. And that's kind of what their position is. Just some books that are out there that you not necessarily wouldn't know about or whatever, but just in case you're happen to see them nowadays, these are people, a guy by the name of Kenneth Gentry, wrote Before Jerusalem Fell, Last Day Madness by Gary DeMar, The Last Days According to Jesus by Sproul, The Last Disciple by Hank Hanegraaff. Now this is, if you ever hear him on the radio, the Bible Answer Man, this is that guy. And he has written this book, The Last Disciple, that from what I can tell is his frustration with Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series that are all premillennial and saying that's not the right view. And so they wrote their, him and this other guy wrote their fictional books about the end times, but it's from a different postmillennial standpoint. And yes. Oh, is that right? How interesting.
Now that I know that he's a post-millennialist, it makes sense to see it that way. But, you know, so they're fighting the world decaying. They're trying to avoid the world decaying in front of their eyes, which would affect their views.
Yeah. Which, you know, and these are some of the interesting things you get into it. I mean, that's not, you know, it's not a bad thing, and I'm not opposed to fighting the decay of the world, but some of the motivations, some of the things that are why it's so important, you know, some of this kind of helps at times you see. Dating the Revelation then becomes very important. There's two primary dates, though there are other date periods offered. But the two primary dates that have been offered and maintained are like A.D. 65, so a few years before A.D. 70. So if you hold to that predisposition, Revelation had to be written then. You can't write it afterwards if it's predicting what occurs in AD 70. So their position, it's essential that you hold it to that. Most of you probably heard that Revelation was written in the 90s. And that's the other dominant view, which, you know, would be, you know, wouldn't work for them. R.C. Sproul, in his Ligonier Ministry website, his statement on the end times, he says, we support the work of Christian organizations and institutions that confess the Lordship of Jesus Christ. We are committed to the implementation of the social and cultural implications of God's commandments for the well-being of man and his environment. We believe our faith should be visible in concrete forms and models of personal and social behavior. We seek to be faithful disciples of Christ, enduring in love and obedience. I don't see anything there that I disagree with, but the wording maybe is a little unusual, or you might say, well, that's kind of interesting wording, doctrinal statement. And it's there because of the last statement. Until he comes again to consummate his kingdom. Not to begin his kingdom, but to bring a close to his kingdom. Reconstructionists, this is according to Hanegraaff, and I'm not real positive on this. I'm pretty sure that he's postmillennial. I'm not sure if he would classify himself as Reconstructionist, but I think so. So he may be more of a classical post-mill, but I think he'd be Reconstructionist. You know, I didn't find him stating that dogmatically, but he says, Reconstructionists arose within a Reformed Christianity. Reconstructionism espouses a doctrine called theonomy. This is the idea that everyone is still bound to the Old Testament laws. In fact, the only exceptions are laws that are either modified or set aside with the New Testament. Reconstructionists also believe that the world will be Christianized through the church's preaching of the gospel and thereby usher in the millennium, which is then followed by Christ's second coming. From this postmillennial vantage point, Reconstructionists reason that believers should take dominion of all areas of society, including politics. Well, no matter how controversial you may think Reconstructionists are, the fact remains that this is a perfectly acceptable Orthodox movement. His last sentence makes me think he holds that position. According to Wayne House and Tommy Ice, who are premillennialists, they say Reconstructionists appropriate for the church, in the sense of New Israel, material blessings for obedience and cursings for disobedience originally promised by God to the defunct nation of Israel. Hence, the urgent tone of their appeal is to the rest of the church. To ignore the Reconstructionist system of ethics is to fall miserably short in the area of sanctification. So, you know, there it's that tying in with it with the law, and the law has to be reflected in our society. According to House and Ice, these are some positional Reconstructionists. But when I read these, you're going to agree with most of them probably. I mean, they're not like they're bad things, but I mean, general decentralization of government and other social structures within a theocentric Christian framework, strong private property rights which limit state or institutional church interference, a restitution as an important element of the criminal justice system, voluntary slavery. I have no idea what they mean by that and where that comes from. A strong national defense until the entire world is reconstructed. Now, that's really interesting. You should have a strong national defense until we have no need for it. I just like to know where that magical point is. You know, just like one day, it's just gone. But that's nevertheless. Application of the death penalty for virtually all of the capital. You have to really know how to read well to read my stuff. Of all capital crimes listed in the Old Testament law, including adultery, homosexuality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Especially, you know, when your children don't behave, you just kill them. That's what the Old Testament says, and that's what you do. A cash gold-based economy with limited or no debt. Other than the one on slavery and perhaps the vast application of the death penalty, there's nothing, that's just things, sounds like good things in general. According to Leitner, who's at the time of this writing was a professor at Dallas Seminary, he quotes in his book Theonomy and Christian Ethics. Greg, and I don't know how you say this guy's name. How do you say it? Bonshin argues at great length, appealing especially to Matthew 5:17-18, that the Mosaic law constitutes a continuing norm for all mankind. In Matthew 5:17, that's where in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus gets into the section that says he didn't come to abolish law but to fulfill it, and he gets in this conflict. Says you've heard it said, but I say to you, and so he's basically arguing off that saying that is the norm. Then Jesus was arguing this should be the norm, and so it becomes the duty of government to enforce biblical law. Leitner cites him once again, and this is actually a quote from Bation's book. Every single stroke of the law must be seen by the Christian as applicable to this very age between the advents of Christ. So the law, is the law, and it should be not the law for Christians, but it's the law for society. Leitner continues and says, he makes no apology in insisting that civil authorities today should be pressured by the church to carry out the death penalty for such things. Once again, the same kind of stuff. Gary DeMar, his ministry website is American Vision, a biblical worldview ministry. These are just little kind of points on his website. Restoring America's biblical foundation from Genesis to Revelation. Equipping and empowering Christians to restore America's biblical foundation. From his statement of faith on the last thing, it says, Christ will return personally and bodily to consummate his kingdom. So once again, to bring it to a conclusion. Now, those aren't bad things. I mean, restoring America's biblical foundation, I'm all for that. I might argue to some extent, when did it ever really have a true biblical foundation? And what do we mean by biblical foundation that it had? But I'm for that. Equipping and empowering Christians to restore America's biblical foundation. I don't oppose that. But what's meant by that is something different than what I would be meaning or embracing. There's a free online encyclopedia, and if it's a free online encyclopedia that people, if you've ever seen this thing, you can go in and edit it. So be sure you understand that when I quote from here that this is a free online encyclopedia that any idiot can go in and edit, I assume, I haven't tried to edit, but that's what, it's got this little box and it says edit, and it, sometimes it says it's looking for a footnote. So you, you know, hope that people that know what they're, know something that are, have written it in there. So take that, somewhat, you know, with that warning there. They would say these are Reconstructionists. Rush Dooney, who lived from, you know, most of the, 20th century, and then Greg Behashin, who died of a heart ailment in 95. Then later you'll see David Chilton, who also died of a heart thing in the late 90s. They're both about the same age. All of those, up to that point, all those guys I know are Reconstructionists. Dr. James Kennedy, Marvin Olaska, and Paul, I don't know how you say, Weirich. I don't know about if they're really Reconstructionists. So the first three, are the, you know, I get that those guys, they wrote extensively on this, and they and the first one is the main guy. He was the main guy. Rush Dooney was the main guy that got this thing going. North, DeMar, Gentry, they're all current contemporary guys that promote this. North primarily writes in the area of economics, and you can look, do a web search, and you'll find his name. You'll find his ministry in Tyler, Texas, and when you look at it, you'll see all economics. You know, his stuff is all in economics, but he has written a lot on this Christian Reconstruction. DeMar has that site that I cited a while ago about American Vision, and Gentry has written some books on this. Kennedy is the presbyter and pastor at Coral Ridge Church. He's author of Evangelism Explosion. I don't find anything on their website that give a position on eschatology. Now, the thing about Kennedy, if you've listened to him or if you look at his site, you know, he's got a lot about this idea of restoring America to its biblical roots. That doesn't make him post-millennial, but he does have it. So he does have some things that it wouldn't be shocking if he is post-millennial by some of the position hold. But I find nothing to necessarily say he is. I even listened to one of his messages online on end times, and all I found, I didn't find him talking about anything about end times. He was just, it was just evangelism because Christ is going to come back. This other guy, this Olasky, is a journalist professor at the University of Texas, and he's an editor at World Magazine. Once again, according to this undocumented webpage of this encyclopedia, it says that he denies that he's a Christian Reconstructionist. But interestingly, he's credited with defining compassionate conservatism and giving Bush the idea of faith-based initiatives. But both of those kinds of things, whether he is a Reconstruction or not, those kinds of things would go well with it. And so you can see why somebody would say, when he's making those kind of statements, you say, oh, you must be that. So I don't know if he is or not. This last guy is a political activist and commentator, and he's the one that coined the term moral majority and was a co-founder of the group with Jerry Falwell. And once again, I don't find anything specifically to say that he is a Reconstructionist, but he might be. If you do a internet search and you put postmillennial or if you put in dominion theology or any of these other terms, you just get a bunch. It's really, there's a lot out there. Now, you know, internet searchers are, unless you already know somebody, name like DeMar, you get all these other people, you have no clue who they are, and, you know, they're, you know, I mean, we can go, well, I couldn't, because if Rob would help me, I could go start my own web page and put my views on there. You don't have to have anything other than somebody set up a web page and then write anything you want to. And so, I'm not trying to say there's any authority in that fact. other than there's lots of it, which tells you there's some real interest. And it's a real popular thing. But it's not the classic view that is so popular. It's this more, to use my term, a more of a militant idea of we're going to impose biblical law on everybody. And we're going to bring in the kingdom. And if that is your belief, then, you know, there's, you know, you, if you're going to act consistent with your belief, then it puts you into this, very much this political realm. So there are these that are not Reconstructionist that conclude that all the religious right that's in politics, they're Reconstructionists. Because if you're in politics, you know, they're going to extrapolate, that's what you're doing. And so it starts, and when you get thinking about it, at times you start going, well, now, I wonder if all these people are post-millennial. You know, is Dobson post-millennial? You know, because he's interested in politics, you know, shaping society. I wonder if Bush has been really influenced, and he's post-millennial. Pat Robertson, you know. I was looking at their website, and I have no clue. From what he was saying, best I could figure out, I would say he's not post-mill. I don't know if I could say he's pre-mill. I'm not sure. It was hard for me to follow. There's a book on their site, on their webpage, so I assume that, you know, it's one they're promoting, so I assume he's not really post to it. And there were places in that, reading that guy's stuff, there were places I thought, well, surely he's saying he's post-mill. Other places that would seem pretty pot, that he was all-mill. Definitely not pre-mill, though. So, you know, just because somebody is interested in politics, interested in shaping society, doesn't mean they're in these groups. But if they're in this contemporary stuff, then that's it moves in these realms, and it takes on, you know, it's where a theology, you know, is very active in what they do. And so this Gary North, you know, all this stuff on economy, the other guys, you know, had a great deal. We saw you kind of had to know what you're looking for, because they don't state it so often out, just straight out. You know, it's not going to be just stated we're necessarily that we're Reconstructionists or that we're post-millennial. But you started seeing this kind of stuff in homeschooling. You know, I don't know if it's still as prevalent. I suspect it's even more prevalent in a lot of it now. But when we were doing homeschooling, you'd see these kind of references. And a lot of it is very good stuff. It's not bad. But you see a lot of focus on our biblical heritage and these kinds of things. And you know, and those are things that, for most of us, that we are drawn to in a positive association with, but yet when you get looking at it, they're coming at it from a little different angle sometimes. And it also has something to do with the way you view United States. Because if the church is a transformed Israel, and if most of the people, you know, or if we were at least our foundations were that, then you're starting to see this as a, you know, if you start using this term, we're a Christian nation, and returning to those biblical roots, then, you know, you start making these equations with the promises to Israel. Those promises are applicable to the United States. And you start, you know, seeing a lot of these, not in the sense of an application, but as a direct promise, that if my people will repent, you know, the Second Chronicles promise, then God will do these things. Not as an application, but as a direct promise, because we're a Christian nation, we are Israel, in that spiritual sense. Sometimes those are just people with bad theology. They're just saying stuff. But other times it's very purposeful, and that's, you know, saying that is the that's who we are. So, any questions or comments or thoughts or regrets? So once again, the one reason for looking at these things is that didn't so much to be a student of all of them, but just an awareness so that when we hear things, you know, we don't get totally confused. So you hear, you know, R.C. Sproul, which I think is, you know, a very good Bible teacher and stuff, but if you heard him talking about last things, he's coming at it from an angle that maybe you'd never heard him. He starts talking about all these things being fulfilled in 70 AD, and you just be like, what? Never heard of this, you know? And so just to be aware, and to be aware of some of these other kinds of things that when you, you know, and you do from time to time see it on the news, something about people wanting the biblical law, you know, being enacted, and that's where this is coming from and why they think it's, you know, should be that way. And any prayer requests?